Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. For tens of thousands of years, humans relied on animals to sustain life. Their skins kept us warm, their oils and meat fueled our bodies and lit our dwellings. Today, with 7 billion humans scattered over the Earth, the symbiotic relationship between humans and the creatures around them has changed dramatically. Of 56,000 species counted, one-third are threatened with extinction. A new book, Wildlife Heroes, features 40 leading conservationists fighting behind the scenes to save some of those endangered critters and habitats. And may I say, the photos in the book are just stunning and oh so seductive. We do have a link to see some at wordofmouthradio.org. Jeff Flocken is the head of the U.S. policy for the International Fund for Animal Welfare and co-author of Wildlife Heroes with Julia Scardina. Jeff's on the line from Washington to tell us more. And Jeff, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much, Virginia.
Well, let's start with those images, Jeff. I am looking at just some amazing photographs of seahorses, of lemurs, of something called an African painted dog. Where did these photos come from?
We were very fortunate. The photos were almost all donated by some of the best wildlife conservation photographers in the world. My co-author and I made a decision early on that any profits we got from the book we would be giving back to wildlife conservation. So because we were giving 100% of our profits away, these different photographers stepped up, and many of them had actually seen these projects in the field and met the heroes and wanted to give back as well. So over half of the photos were donated by different individual photographers.
Well, I've just been walking around the station this morning showing people just adorable photographs of a baby African rhino or a baby cheetah or bonobo and this unbelievably cute sun bear, most adorable bear ever. How important are these images to gathering public support for conservation efforts?
They really are. Photography tells a story that I think gets people involved and makes them fall in love with the animals. So it was a goal of ours to really get the best pictures we possibly could, and we lined up Sterling Zumbrun as our photo editor, who really helped us find these amazing photographers. He's a professional photographer himself, and many of the photos in the book are from him, and helped us find the different photographers to get people engaged, and then move them onto the story of the people and what they're doing to help.
We are familiar with the plight of many of the animals highlighted in the book. Of course, the African elephant, varieties of whales, sea turtles. But you've also included some pretty obscure animals. Tell us a little bit about, let's say, the kind of cartoonish-looking saiga.
Yeah, that's quite the interesting critter, and most people have never heard of them. It's a antelope that's found on the steppes of Central Asia and Europe, and also in the arid deserts there. And it honestly looks like an alien. It has these huge bulging eyes set on either side of the head, and this rippled nose, and ribbed horns that are kind of a flesh pinkish color. Its spindly legs, it's just a really odd critter. Of course, it's very well adapted for its environment. Its nose, in fact, operates to help filter all the dust and sand that's found in the desert where it lives, and also warms the air because it gets extremely cold in these areas of Mongolia or Russia where it's found. Unfortunately, with the species, it's actually had the most dramatic decline of any mammal species in our lifetime. It has happened as a result of poaching for its meat and poaching for its horn, which is valued in traditional Asian medicines, as well as habitat loss.
Yeah, it's critically endangered right now. There are several notes on all of these, what we should know about the critters and why they are important to habitat. So let's look at another one. The tapir, which is the biggest land animal in South America, looks sort of like a pig crossed with an anteater. So what is its role in maintaining the forest?
So tapirs, as you mentioned, are the largest land mammal in South America, and it is closely related to the rhino. It looks a little bit like a hippo with a large, long snout. And what they found is that Dr. Patricia Medici, who's the hero focused on the book, has set aside plots of land in different parts of habitats where the tapir lives and effectively secluded it so that tapirs are not able to access that area. And what she found is that the biodiversity in those regions goes down among the plant species. And this is really important because obviously it has a ripple effect to other animals that rely on these fruits and plants. And the reason this is happening is because tapirs are tremendous seed dispersers. When they eat different fruits or pods or seeds in the jungle, it travels through their digestive system, and they're able to drop it in their feces throughout the forest and thereby spread the plants around. When you take the taper out of the equation, the biodiversity of the plants in the region go down.
So what's threatening its survival?
Tapirs are being poached. You'll find the kind of recurring themes about all these species that they're being poached either for meat or to fill a desire by humans, either trophy hunting or traditional Asian medicines or habitat loss. And the tapir is facing both of those. It doesn't help that the tapir has a bad reputation. In the U.S. language, you've probably heard the term jackass applied to an idiot. Well, the Portuguese word for tapir is anta, and they use it the exact same context as an idiot. And one of the things that Dr. Medici is doing is she's trying to change that around and have people embrace this animal and not consider it as a symbol for stupidity.
You know, I remember a Brazilian conservationist once telling me that poverty is the greatest enemy of conservation. I mean, oftentimes, as you've mentioned, these creatures are hunted by local populations or for profitable in the prolific wildlife trade. How deep or how big is that trade?
The illegal wildlife trade is huge. It's considered second only to trades in arms and drugs globally. Estimates as high as $20 billion annual. And there are some experts who say we might just be scratching the surface. That's just what we suspect or know of as a sampling of what's been confiscated and found. One of the heroes in our book, Dr. Steve Galster, who works in Bangkok, Thailand, is really working to address that trade, going and doing undercover investigations, doing stings, trying to stop ivory smugglers or people who are smuggling parts of tigers, both very imperiled species that are being pummeled by this trade, as are rhinos for their horns. So we need people out there trying to stop the trade. And we also highlight Grace Guy Gabriel, who's working in China to try to stop demand.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Asian countries are the consumers of these different parts or products coming from endangered species. So she actually works with my organization, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and is doing tremendous things to try to stop the consumers from trying to buy these products.
Right, showing them that there are actually synthetic medicines or other naturally produced medicines that do the same job.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Jeff Flocken, co-author of a beautiful new book called Wildlife Heroes, 40 Leading Conservationists and the Animals They're Committed to Saving. It's portraits of people who've really committed their lives to saving animals, sea creatures, and the habitats they thrive on in the earth and the air and the sea. Well, that's the thing. I mean, while the stars of the book are these amazing animals, it's the passion of the conservationists that we learn about. They're really wildlife heroes, but warriors. Tell us a little bit about their work and what's involved. Let's look at S.T. Wong's work to save the sun bear, for example.
Absolutely. S.T. Wong works in the forests of Borneo, the island of Borneo in Southeast Asia, and he lived in one of the harshest environments I could think of to have to study. I was actually just there visiting his project a few months ago, and it rained constantly, and the forest there is alive. The plants will literally harm you. There are plants when you sit on a log that they'll emit a secretion that will eat through your clothes and burn your skin. They have ants that are carnivorous and will bite at you or have the ability to bite you. It's a dangerous environment. He actually lost one of his researchers in a flood who was out there doing field work for the sun bear. And one of the crazy things about folks like S.T. Wong and is that he's been studying the sun bear for decades, and he's only come across 14 in the wild.
Amazing.
After decades of studying. Another one of our conservationists, John Lucas, who works on Okapi in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is an era of incredible political instability, has been shot at in his jeep, in planes, by local insurgencies. And he has also worked for decades, and he has never seen his animal in the wild even once.
Amazing. But yet they're so passionate and visionary and committed. I wonder if you get any sense of what connects people to particular creatures. Like, Elena Bykova, how does she fall in love with the saiga? Or Greg Rasmussen with the African painted dog, a very odd-looking creature.
It's interesting. They all come from different areas of their own commitment. One of our heroes, Nguyen Van Thai, grew up in Vietnam, and he fell in love with pangolins when he saw his local villagers taking a mother pangolin, its baby, out of its nest and taking it home to go in the pot to eat for dinner. And he decided that he needed to find a way to get his local countrymen to change their views about these animals. And pangolins are being wiped out in the wild. It looks like a large armadillo, just a really interesting animal. It's sometimes called the scaly anteater. And they eat thousands and thousands of ants, which helps the local people get rid of that pest. But the species is being eliminated.
What does it take to be a conservation hero? One of your heroes, I think it's Marc Encrenaz, if I've got the word right. Anybody, if given a chance, can become a scientist or a conservation hero if they have passion, drive, and a little guidance. But what brings these people over the edge? You know, often giving up families, often giving up regular lives, sacrificing what is called a normal life for what is probably incredibly rewarding work. But what drives them?
Well, I would even add that while possibly personally rewarding, it's very hard to make great gains in this field. You know, we're constantly battling from increasing population, increasing demand on resources. So the victories are few and far between. And in almost every one of these species highlighted in the book is continuing to decline, even though these individuals are finding very creative, unique solutions to helping the animals. That tends to make them drive is that they not only, the reason that we pick them as heroes is not only have they committed themselves, but they've been successful. They've found ways to get around some of these challenges that these species are found, and that they typically involve working with local communities. If they're not part of the community originally, then moving there and being with them and helping to do it. And they come from a variety of backgrounds. Some of the ones we talked about have been scientists, but we also have lawyers and photographers and authors who help use their own mediums to save these species.
Well, Jeff, I really want to thank you for opening up some of these heroes to us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Virginia.
Jeff Locken, co-author of Wildlife Heroes, 40 Leading Conservationists and the Animals They're Committed to Saving. He's head of U.S. policy at the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And we do have a link to more on the book, including some of these pictures we've been oohing and aahing over at wordofmouthradio.org. And that is it for Word of Mouth today. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. And we do invite you to join us in making the broadcast possible by contributing with questions, comments, feedback, and ideas. You can post them to wordofmouthradio.org, where you can also listen back to today's segments, dig in deeper to an archive of stories, and email stories that you enjoyed to your friends. You can also contribute on Facebook and on Twitter. We will be back again tomorrow for more Word of Mouth from listener-supported New Hampshire Public Radio.